Hello, 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 and welcome to Drive Through HR. I am host Crystal Miller, and I am with Joe Brooks, CEO at Zapoint. Am I saying that correctly?
That's correct.
Awesome, Joe. Well, thanks for joining us today, and why don't you let everyone know who you are and what Zapoint does?
Sure. My name is Joe Brooks. I'm originally from the UK, but have been working for Zapoint for 7 years here in Boston. And Zapoint develops Skills Mapper, which is an application that helps organizations with career management, kind of more progressive organizations that have structures in place to help their employees understand where the opportunities are for them to progress and access the resources they need to get there. So our solution really is about empowering employees with their own career development.
Well, okay, so that sounds really cool. We're going to dig into that in a second. But you said you're in Boston, so does that mean you're basically snowed into your house, or is Boston functioning today?
not far off. We had a few more inches yesterday. There's nowhere else to put any snow, but fortunately we can. I live close to the office, so I could get in okay.
Well, that's definitely a good thing. All right, so let's talk about this. Employee engagement and empowering employees through their own career development. That sounds really kind of utopia-ish. Is that possible?
It is. It's surprising how many companies don't really have, you know, anything in place to really help them. But I think the simple view on it is that there are jobs and opportunities for career development in companies, and there are people looking to fill those jobs and develop their careers, and often there's just not visibility between the two. And as an employee, we often read about challenges around retaining key staff, and number one reason often given for people leaving is not necessarily getting a higher salary elsewhere, but often that they don't see that there is an opportunity for them to progress. So it's certainly a little bit utopian, but it doesn't seem like it should be that hard a goal to aim for.
So if that's the number one reason that they're leaving, though, it obviously is causing a lot of – If that's the number one reason that employees cite for leaving, beyond, I guess, bosses, right? Because I actually thought the number one reason people left jobs was because of the boss that they were with. But aside from that, if that's a big reason why they leave, then obviously it's something that companies don't have right. So what do you think that the problem is? Why aren't more companies in tune with career development and making sure that there is a pathway for the people that they invest so much money in hiring?
I think there are a number of challenges. I mean, I think certainly some challenges that come up within HR and talent management in general is that a lot of the practices being followed, were traditionally paper-based practices. You know, even like performance reviews often were written on a piece of paper and filed away, and a lot of HR solutions were merely a way of automating some of those paper-based processes. So, you know, whilst technology was helping, those things were still often filed away and not really used, and I'm not sure if historically that's maybe some, you know, possessive HR executives that really want to kind of hold on to some of those practices. But I think really, you know, companies often have a competency model in place. They have job role requirements, and you know, the only time you really get to see those often is when you have applied for a role, if you've been, you know, lucky enough to realize it's there. And you know, our view is that if that sort of information is more widely visible and transparent, then it gives me the opportunity to say, well, you know, maybe I'm not in a position to be promoted or progress my career right now, but it would be useful to know where I'd like to get to within the next few years. I think some of that information, or a lot of that information for many companies exists, but it's buried deep in some sort of paper or virtual archive and just not really available for employees.
Okay. Well, all right. With that intro, I guess I should ask you, just to be fair, I mean, since it is what we do, what's keeping you up at night? I mean, it sounds like you've got a lot on your plate.
What's keeping me up at night? I guess for us, or for me here at Zapoint, is selling that vision, you know, to companies that we, you know, we have a lot of progressive companies that are wanting to do that sort of thing, but also there are many companies that can see that that's the ideal they want to get to, but are not able to get there yet. So what's keeping me up at night is how do we get HR from being a, you know, maybe a more tactical function within a lot of companies to being more strategic.
So tactical versus strategic, and that kind of leads into, I'm going to go ahead and say it, though I'm probably going to get pummeled for it, the seat at the table when it comes to, you know, HR and the executives. It sounds lovely, like it really does. But I have to be kind of the pessimist today and say, do you think that many companies, that many HR departments care about being strategic versus being tactical? I mean, if they wanted to be, wouldn't they be?
I mean, I think they do care about it. I think there's obviously a lot of organizations where there's, you know, legacies in terms of how things are done. We often find, and I certainly companies I've worked for in the past have been the case where, you know, the person that's sitting at the top of HR or above that making the decisions maybe is resistant to change, so doesn't necessarily promote it. It's certainly an ideal, but there are many companies shifting in that direction and realizing that, you know, the human resource is the valuable resource that makes most companies what they are. And if you aren't giving that seat at the table, are you risking losing that great talent just for the sake of maintaining the status quo?
Well, I mean, I guess I would argue that, yeah, they are risking it, but to that end, I'm really picking on HR today. I have to say, if it were that big of a deal, maybe they don't understand just how expensive not doing something about it is.
Right.
What do you find from talking with companies?
I think that there isn't necessarily a direct line made between, you know, often HR is seen as a cost center rather than something that's going to drive better sales and profitability. So I think often things are kind of siloed, you know, hiring costs and training costs, you know, these are all interwoven things in, you know, what attracts somebody to a company, what keeps them there, and often are just viewed as separate items rather than grouped together. You know, often HR has been this kind of process-driven department that maybe has been a little bit blinkered in looking at some parts of the business. So, you know, I think there are definitely companies out there that are recognizing the value and the cost in terms of retaining and hiring the right people. And, even a relatively junior person, you're investing a lot of time and money to get them back up to speed, and keeping that valuable resource within the company is really, really important if you have somebody that you've already invested heavily in. So I think companies say are getting better at it, and I think maybe the shift from talent management being a process-driven thing to moving more into terms of engagement and how you make employees want to work there is something that is changing that.
Do you really think it's process that's what is the thing that's causing the blinders to be on in HR? I mean, like, I don't know that process is the problem as much as they don't know what to do or they don't see the value in doing it. I mean, process is
right.
A great thing, right? Process drives
efficiency. Right, process is a great thing. I think it's more maybe sticking with a tried and tested or existing process rather than looking beyond to see what else can be done. I mean, I think for some organizations, and, you know, understandably, if you're a very large organization that doesn't yet embrace career management and you have thousands of job roles and multiple competency models, it's maybe something that is an overwhelming thing to take on to get all that information in place, where if you're a small company with, you know, 20 roles, it's something that you can assign some time to and know you're going to be able to get it done. But I think with career management, you know, you don't have to go from, 0 to 100%. It could just be something where you're looking at general rather than specific roles for career development, you know, how you work from being a manager to a director to a VP. You know, it's something that can be attacked in bite-sized chunks, but I think a lot of companies see where they are now and where ultimately they would need to get to as one step. And as with a career path, you know, if I am a junior employee and want to become a C-level employee, I'm not going to do it in one step. There are different things that need to be done to get there. And I think career management can be approached the same way.
So how do, so where should a company start? If this is something that they want to explore, if there's an HR department that really feels like it could help make a difference, how do you make that business case?
I think going back to your previous point, making that a business case, just looking at the, you know, the costs that a company incurs in terms of recruiting and training, you know, employees is a pretty compelling case that if you can even retain one or two employees, you're saving a significant sum of money. Often people view investment in a, you know, a new system or application to support a new initiative as a huge investment. We know that with some of the legacy HR systems, companies are spending millions of dollars. But if they can look to add kind of a best of breed solution for something they're trying to address, it's often, you know, tens of thousands, and tens of thousands is the cost really of one employee being lost and rehired and retrained. So I think the difficulty is maybe when you're looking at return on investment, you know, you need some history within the company to be able to give a firm number on what may have been spent and saved. But I think generally HR executives will agree, you know, there is a significant cost to hiring people. There are stats out there for average costs of hiring and training at different levels. And if you can look at the cost of implementing a career management system as something that by saving a couple of employees, you've already made up that money, I don't think it's a difficult case to prove as worth pursuing.
So once you've made the business case, where's a good place to start?
A good place to start is getting having an understanding of the skills and competencies within your workforce. And this is something where, when we work with companies that have already a very detailed competency model in place. So for them, it's more about just making that information visible, and others who have nothing, where it's a question of almost performing a skills inventory or a skills audit on some of your workforce to say, well, hey, you know, what do we already have? And maybe this is a good starting point to be able to benchmark what those key skills and competencies might be as we're looking to define, you know, ideal profiles for job roles. Most companies already have some of that already in place, but it's often something that they did an awful long time ago, and should be, you know, a living, breathing inventory that they look at reviewing. So I think for us, you know, something that we stress is this isn't something that you're putting a definition and process in place and that's stuck cast in stone for the next 10 years. You know, you could be starting off just looking at a really simple set of core competencies, for example, and saying, well, you know, let's look at what we think as an HR organization we want within certain roles, and let's compare that with what we already have. And use that as a starting point to start defining that framework that we can reveal to our employees. But as I said earlier, we don't need to take that to the level where every single job and every single employee within the organization needs a granularly defined job role. It could just be saying, let's, you know, define this simple set of competencies as a starting point and then expand that as we more deeply engage in career management.
So when you understand all of the options, because you understand, all the options of where employees can go in terms of your company, where does career pathing fit in?
So career pathing is something that, when an employee has visibility and they understand, you know, where they are right now and maybe how well they match their current role, obviously for them it's a good indicator or reality check of how close they might be to making the next step. But potentially, they can, a company could define a very structured career path where if I'm a director of marketing and want to become VP of marketing, there are several jobs in between, I could be steered towards a specific path that they want me to pursue. But it's a risk of using another phrase like a seat at the table, you know, putting a stake in the ground to say, this is who I am, this is where I want to be, and this is the skills I have, helps them communicate to the organization, you know, I'm somebody that wants to progress, allows the organization to say, well, maybe I as your manager or as the HR manager, you know, give my stamp of approval to this career path, and therefore more formally I can be helping you with the resources you need to get there. But I think it helps aspirational employees communicate that they want to move forward, and then helps organizations to look at their high potentials and also where there are potentially gaps in a succession plan. For us, career management is really the flip side view of succession planning. And if I, as an HR manager, can see that there are people wanting to progress to a certain role, that's great. But also, it's really valuable for me to see if there are people that don't want to progress to a certain role, or there's a role that has no interest internally, because I can start to build out my succession plans to say, well, either we need to develop people for that role, or we maybe need to think about looking externally so we're not exposed if that person were to leave.
So career management as opposed to organizational development, do you think that there's maybe, is that the same thing? Maybe just a better way of saying it. I mean, I guess what I'm thinking is I'm wondering if that could basically take the place of OD in a way that puts the employee as the center and the focus as opposed to, you know, the organization.
Right, exactly. Right, I think career management is one of those terms that different people might understand differently. But I think from my perspective, career management is really the ability for me as an employee to communicate where I want to go. So it's my steering my own career development, whereas organizational development is, ultimately has the same goal, but it's typically a top-down approach to that rather than the employee up. So for us, it's career management is kind of employee-centric because, you know, I'm the one that knows where I want to go, and I may well need feedback or guidance from my manager to say, actually, maybe you'd be better going this way rather than that way. But it's me driving the process.
Well, and if employee retention is the goal, that definitely sounds like a better way to go. So when companies do implement these kind of programs, what sort of results do they see in terms of employee retention? Just on the average, I know every company is different.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I mean, I think it also depends on the way in which it's implemented, and I say that because there are companies that implement as a kind of directive to say, you know, you must engage in this, and there are companies that make it more of an opt-in program to say, hey, you know, here's a tool that's available for you rather than you must go and do it. And I think that's an interesting approach because, you know, when people are told they have to do something, often it becomes a burden versus here's a tool to help you get there. It really does vary on the sizes of company, but I would say, you know, on average, we would expect probably to see at least a 10% improvement on retention. Say it's a little bit difficult on the ROI, to give a really accurate equation that's going to work it out. But we certainly see a reasonable uptick.
Well, I mean, just basically off of the $44,000 that we discussed earlier in the show, 10% that can definitely equal a lot of money. So that's cool. Let's do a quick reset, and then I want to talk about how tech fits into employee retention programs today. So if you're just now tuning in, you're hearing the lovely voice of Joe Brooks, who is the CEO of Zappoint. Zappoint's whole point is to look at career development as a tool of employee engagement, and we're talking about employee retention. So thanks for joining into Drive-Thru HR, and now Joe, how does technology fit into employee retention? Does it make it easier or does it gunk it up?
I think it definitely makes it easier. I mean, I think it's important to get it right in that, you know, nobody wants to have 20 systems with different passwords and logins they need to access every day. So I think if technology is smart and works together, then it really helps. It doesn't become a burden if the employees can see that the tools are there to help them. There's obviously a variation between the different generations with the baby boomers getting to the end of their careers versus, some of the younger generations that are maybe more tech savvy. But I think transparency and availability of information is what technology enables. So as long as the employee doesn't feel too burdened that they have 20 systems to go to, I think it really helps. It avoids what I mentioned earlier, where the traditional process is where something's written on a sheet of paper or filled in an Excel spreadsheet that's saved on someone's desktop or in their filing cabinet and not visible to anyone else, and really enables organizations to have a data set that they can mine and access and get great feedback on things that are happening within their organization.
So, okay, I will say that if a company could simplify my tech experience, that would be more likely to keep me.
Right.
But on the flip side of things, I hear the words transparency and organizational transparency anyway, and wonder how much transparency do you really want employees to have? That's, I guess, where I'm wanting to go with this.
I think there's definitely, there's definitely information that in your, your HR role and your people manager role, that is information that's specific and relevant to you, that is not information that's going to be transparent to all of the employees. But I think we're talking about transparency of information around roles and requirements and skill sets. And if I as an employee know I need to develop project management as a skill, having transparency into the resources the company has, maybe formal resources like training courses or informal like the people who have those skills, that skill in their profile, and enabling me to maybe reach out to them as mentors. Transparency and technology enable that relationship to happen a lot more easily than if I'm requiring an introduction from an HR manager who happens to know somebody has the right skill, for example. So one way in which transparency is really valuable, both to the organization and the individual from our experience, is often companies have an aspirational view of where they want the company to be or what skills they think a role needs, but they don't actually know what skills they already have within their workforce. And having that information transparently available helps both them to find the right people for a role, but also me as an employee to say, hey, maybe this guy is going to be able to help guide me in the right skill set that I know I need to develop.
That's interesting. I remember talking with someone last year, and one of the things that they had said in terms of career development and retention was connecting unrelated employees. So if you're a project manager wanting to be a project manager, to use your example, working with a project manager that wasn't on your team right now, so it didn't feel like it was really affecting your job performance, that you weren't going to be rated on it, but you could learn more about skills necessary and the role. And that seemed like an interesting thing, but somewhat taxing for the mentor in that relationship. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think with a mentoring relationship, it's important that obviously both sides are buying into that. So I think if individuals have the ability to say, hey, I'm willing to help people, they're obviously going to be more attractive to an individual looking for mentorship. I mean, I think, maybe some people think that mentoring is going to be this big commitment of time where they're going to be training and coaching individuals, and actually it might just be imparting some words of wisdom or experience from the context in which they've employed that skill. So I think as long as the system allows for me as somebody who is maybe perceived as an expert in a field to say, hey, I'm willing to help or not willing to help, as the case may be, it ensures that dialogue and communication that happens between employees is, mutually accepted and beneficial.
Fair. So one of the things that has been said on our Twitter stream actually came from Dwayne Lay, which is a good point. Like so many things, HR tech is useless if the people using it don't know how to use it. So
Right. How
do you make sure that everyone that would be involved with that, because, what you're talking about sounds like something that's an organizational-wide tool. How do you make sure that gets adopted?
For us, the key to that is really making sure that a user interface is simple and intuitive. I think what can put employees off with some traditional HR systems, and certainly a lot we've seen, where you log in and there's so much information and so many different places to go that it's kind of overwhelming. For us with career management and our application skills mapper, it's about a familiar interface. People are very used to using you know, a LinkedIn or a Facebook. And whilst we certainly don't want to replicate either of those, when you log into one of those, you're going in with typically a clear purpose in mind and relatively few choices of what you can be doing. So keeping it simple so that, you know, you're communicating to an employee what they need to do, but in an interface that they're used to using and feel very relaxed using, is really going to drive engagement a lot more than logging into a system with, 20 tabs and an awful lot of fields that I need to fill in. So I think it's partly about user face and partly about obviously clearly communicating, you know, why they're there and the benefits they're going to be getting, rather than saying every 3 months you need to log in and fill in this information, because that starts feeling a lot more like being on the receiving end of an HR process rather than me doing something that I think is going to help progress my career.
So that does sound like we're adding work to the employee, though. In an already overworked system, I could see how aspirational employees or high potentials would be very invested in going in and making sure that their skills are up to date and that they understand the steps between where they are and where they want to be. But let's be honest, that's, if you're lucky, 15% of your workforce, maybe 20, probably not anywhere near that.
It's certainly going to vary, and I think ultimately if people are in a role where they are not interested in moving up, you know, that's a good thing to know too. If you're identifying those people that can become part of succession plans and you can identify those people that are happy where they are with the status quo, then arguably I think you're getting useful value out of the system by identifying who those 15 or 20% are. But I think other things that we look at is saying, well, you know, saving a career path is one thing, but also there are other elements of developing my skill set, you know, maybe taking some courses that are specific to developing my business skills, which is, you know, something we have within Skills Mapper. So I might not be saying I want to be the next CEO, but I am saying, hey, well, you know, maybe I could brush up my marketing skills, because, you know, it helps boost my profile a little bit, and also, you know, shows that I'm engaging. I might not be engaging in moving to my next career job role within the next 6 months, but I am still growing myself as a person, making myself more attractive within the company, and hopefully becoming a more well-rounded employee.
Okay, so training and development, you can totally get behind that. How does that interface with, like, the management, employees? So I guess what I'm asking is, a lot of companies don't have a formalized training plan, right? There's
right.
ideas, and it's kind of left to the employee in many companies to figure out what they need to do and how they need to do it. Something formal is kind of cool, but, again, if you don't have the tech, where do you start with that?
I mean, I think firstly the point we've already touched on with mentoring, you know, people often forget about the kind of informal resources, which really is, you know, the guy sitting at the desk next to you happens to be more experienced in something that you want to develop your skills in. So, you know, reaching out to him or her and developing that relationship. For us also, we kind of prepackage career management with learning tracks around business skills in things like finance, accounting, and marketing, so that an employee who maybe doesn't yet have a career path saved can still go in and say, well, actually, you know, marketing is an area I'd like to develop in, and the courses are a kind of MBA-level content broken down into bite-size chunks that they can take in a spare 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. So, you know, for us, we're already offering that, but then that can be dovetailed into a more formal plan if a company wanted to embed their own learning. But I think they say that identifying what skills you have and what you therefore don't have is obviously a starting point in that. We're not necessarily saying you need to deploy a full-scale training plan and a career management plan, but there are some maybe simple courses that can benefit people across the organization that they can start taking straight away.
Awesome. Well, with that, we are pretty much out of time. I really appreciate you coming on today. If anyone wants to learn more, then they are at Zappoint, Zappoint, on the Twitter. And we will be talking with Matt Charney tomorrow. Thank you so much, everyone. Have a great day.
Thank you.